Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing great. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from you, and we finally made it to spring, and the flowers are out, and the weather's nice. And
it is beautiful, and the azalea's blooming. The dogwood's just finished blooming, so it's really a nice time of year.
This week and next week, we're going to focus on diabetes. This week specifically, we're going to look at self-monitoring. For years, have tried to involve patients more in their care, and one of the things that we've done with regard to diabetes is having them monitor and adjust their medications. This week, an article from the Canadian Medical Journal asks, is self-monitoring of glucose cost-effective for patients with type 2 diabetes who are not taking insulin? A very good question. What did the authors find, Mark?
Well, this was a cost-effectiveness analysis, so they weren't gathering original data. They were looking at data from a lot of different studies and then combining that with information about cost to try and figure out what's the bang for the buck with self-monitoring. And, you know, certainly self-monitoring is one of those things that seems to make sense and probably does for some patients. But on average, is it useful? Is it something that we should absolutely mandate for all our patients? And increasingly, there have been some recent randomized trials that have shown little or no benefit. That probably the best one was in the British Medical Journal in 2008, and they randomized newly diagnosed type 2 diabetics to self-monitoring or no self-monitoring, just periodic A1C, and after a year, there was absolutely no difference in their A1C levels. There was a meta-analysis where they found a lot of similar studies, and they found that the average reduction in A1C was only 0.25% in patients who were randomized to self-monitoring. So probably a lot less than we might think. The authors ask, okay, let's assume that this is true, that there is this small but real reduction. Does it matter? And they use the results of the UK PDS study and other sources of data to model the cost effectiveness over 40 years of doing this self-monitoring. And they assumed that people used about 9 or 10 test strips per week, which was typical based on what Canadians do according to their health insurance records. The insurance companies over there are paying for about 10 a week on average. They assumed that the cost was $7 per 100 test strips, which is actually somewhat lower than they are here in this country. So over a 40-year lifespan, their model estimated that there were some small absolute benefits of the slightly lower hemoglobin A1C, 0.08% reduction in end-stage renal disease and about a 0.4% reduction in MI and in heart failure, and a 0.2% reductions in stroke and blindness and amputation. So small but real benefits. And was that worth all of the extra effort and monitoring and cost of the strips and cost of the monitors? And what they found was it was actually about $113,000 per quality adjusted life year in Canadian dollars, or about $110,000 per year in US dollars. So there is a benefit, there is a cost, and I guess it's up to us to decide, is it worth it for our patients? Is that $110,000 per year that we gain worth it?
Right. So, you know, again, to emphasize that this wasn't done by clinicians. It was done by economists. The question that they were asking was this cost effective? They came up with an answer of $110,000 per quality adjusted life year. Our listeners, on the other hand, are clinicians, and they're trying to decide in real life whether this is something that they should encourage their patients to do. What additional additional pieces of information, Mark, do we need to be able to come up with a recommendation? Or do we know that there's a subset of patients where this really is worth our time and effort to get them monitoring themselves?
Yeah, I don't know that we can prospectively, you know, identify who's going to really benefit or not. And I haven't seen data on that, although that's a good thought. You should be able to look at some of these clinical trials and see which patients seem to benefit more than others. But I think the really important thing is that we need to ask our patients. And if somebody is really into monitoring and self-efficacy and wants to know what is going on with their sugar and feels better about it, then certainly great, good for them, you know, go for it. On the other hand, if it's a situation like members of my family who are in their 80s and who are frail and who have a lot of other things going on and have pretty stable, mild diabetes, to have them self-monitoring is just increasing a burden with very little evidence that it's going to make any difference. So I think we have to be sensitive to the patient and their values and not use a one-size-fits-all approach of saying everyone has to self-monitor and you're a bad patient if you don't.
Excellent answer. Anyways, thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again about diabetes next week. Thanks so much.
All right, good talking to you.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.